welcome. My name is Michael O'Connell, and you're listening to It's All Journalism. A few weeks back, we interviewed Steve Buttrey, who heads up social engagement at Digital First Media. Today, we're going to be talking to John Wenzel, who works for one of Digital First's affiliates, the Denver Post. John works on the Post's online arts and features desk. One of his success stories is the HeyReverb.com music and culture blog, which John co-edited with blog and pop music critic and entertainment editor Ricardo Baca, who founded Reverb. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
So tell us about Hey Reverb. What makes it different?
Hey Reverb, as you said, was founded by our pop music critic. And at first, it wasn't that different, I think, than most music blogs. You know, we weren't thinking ourselves as competition for the larger music blogs out there like Pitchfork or Stereogum or Brooklyn Vegan or blogs like that. But as it's grown over the years and as we've added contributors and sort of, rewritten our mission statement, so to speak, it's really become more than a music blog, more than a local music blog. And, as you said, kind of a culture site, something, that's moving a little bit more in a direction like Gawker or, a Gawker Media blog or New York Magazine's Vulture site. We cover, obviously, local bands and local music news, and we review, national acts that come through town. But we also have columns. We offer free downloads. We have our own, recording session that's similar to the Daytrotter sessions, where we record bands and offer free downloads or streams of their exclusive sets that they did for us in this local studio here called Uneven Studios. And, as we continue to expand the blog, it's going on about 2 years now that there's a full-time position and a managing editor for the blog. We've got, ideas for, this is on down the road, but for, apps and even more expanded coverage outside of music. I do a comedy column for it. So it's not just a music blog. It's kind of an evolving culture blog, but certainly it's still an experiment. So, we're still kind of seeing what works and what doesn't.
It sounds like you're actually producing sort of content, not just like writing reviews and et cetera, but you're actually, providing music and other things that people usually don't associate with maybe something that's connected with a newspaper.
Exactly. And that's kind of the nail that you hit on the head there is that it's a different audience than, the Denver Post print product or even the Denver Post online coverage. Our research and our guts tell us that a lot of people who read Reverb have never read the Denver Post, would maybe never read the Denver Post, or only occasionally read it, and even then only online. So, we want to offer things that sort of reinforce the brand we like to think we've developed, which is, younger, kind of hipper, more connected, more social media savvy. And that content, like I said, includes, exclusive recording sessions that we did, sort of like NPR's Tiny Desk or, Daytrotter, things like that. And photo slideshows, those are a huge page view generator for us, our, photo slideshows of concerts and events, and commentary and columns. And like I said, things that aren't, sort of run-of-the-mill music blog, and that content is what the, name of the game is these days, is cross-platform, whether it's mobile or tablets or PC, is, you want to have something to give people other than just straight-up commentary.
Now, is there a like a revenue stream with this, or do you guys have advertising that's sort of coupled with this? Any sponsorships, things like that?
We do, yeah. We sponsor shows. We put our name on shows around town, usually at, smaller venues, indie venues, small rock clubs. We sell ads for the site. We didn't used to, and we're doing more and more of that. We give away tickets. We used to have shows that we sponsored at venues around town here in Denver, where we, have dance parties and guest DJs and give away T-shirts and stickers and buttons and things like that. We tried to think outside of just the blog itself and being sort of more of an entity. South by Southwest, the annual, music conference and performance spectacular in Austin, Texas every year. We have a presence down there. We have Reverb parties there. CMJ, the College Music Journal marathon that they put on in New York every fall. We have Reverb parties there. And we bring in, curate local and national bands, up-and-coming bands, bands with buzz. Yeah, I mean, sort of long story short, we do have site sponsorships and sell ads for it, but we also do, we sponsor things ourselves.
You seem to be sort of hitting the recipe here, which is, you know, that you find it, you define an audience, you figure out what they're interested in, you provide content, and then you sort of service that audience through, you know, the content they can come and see, but also the social media and sort of creating a buzz about what you're doing. And then maybe the next step is somehow trying to monetize that, either, you know, advertising or sponsorships of shows or something like that.
We want to create loyalty with our readers, but we don't want to do it in a surfacey, superficial way. We want to demonstrate that, you know, we're a trusted voice, that we have that sort of traditional journalism backbone of critical thought and objectivity, you know, when it matters with news items, things like that. But we want to be legitimate in the eyes of our readers, and we want to show them that, you know, we're deeply knowledgeable about the things that we're writing about and covering. You know, we really want to try to demonstrate to people that this isn't just a grab for, you know, the sort of 18 to 28 demo that everybody is, you know, so desperately trying to reach. Mm-hmm. We really want to show them that we care about this too, and we feel an ownership of this brand we've developed and this experiment that we're, you know, kind of constantly going forward with.
It's kind of interesting. If you look at it in the history of journalism, you know, maybe it's kind of easy to, you know, sort of define it with like sports, that, you know, that people, you know, with sports columnists and sports coverage and sports radio programs, you know, those types of listeners, those types of that type of audience, they recognize legitimacy. If the writer or the person doesn't, you know, understand what they're doing, you know, the people aren't going to trust them, or they're not going to follow them. And I imagine sort of the same thing with entertainment, with music, that people, you know, they're going to go to people who they recognize have some sort of knowledge and legitimacy and understanding of what they're really interested in. They're not just, you know, just brushing over the top to try to, you know, hey, we've got, you know, we wrote a story about a band, you know, come and check us out.
Well, and exactly, and sports blogs too, and sports, you know, commentators. Woody Page, our sports columnist at the Denver Post, longtime sports columnist here, who's on ESPN's Around the Horn, mm-hmm. and who, you know, writes a column in print and online. You know, he has a great following. He's a great brand. He's an asset to the Denver Post. And our Denver Broncos coverage, we often joke around the newsroom about how, you know, that sort of is keeping the paper afloat at times. And when, you know, when other papers have experimented with paywalls online and charging, you know, for exclusive content, the sports coverage is kind of, you know, part and parcel of that, is offering more in-depth commentary, interviews with players. So, you know, we want to obviously take cues from what works and what we've seen generating page views and new readers online. And so sports coverage has certainly been part of that at the Post, not just with the Denver Broncos, but I mean, Denver's a great sports town with, mm-hmm. you know, the Colorado Avalanche and the Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Rockies and soccer and lacrosse and everything. So what can we do that our sports desk is doing? You know, they're lucky in a sense that they have a great built-in audience, but, you know, so does live music. So does cultural commentary and arts and entertainment. And in recent years, stand-up comedy, which has kind of seen a renaissance commercially and creatively. Mm-hmm. So we want to use that built-in audience that's there. But like I said earlier, you know, obviously speak to them intelligently and not just cynically say, oh, hey, you know, we're going to get page views on this Madonna photo slideshow like, you know, we did a ton of yesterday. She just played the Pepsi mm-hmm. Center in Denver, and there was some controversy about her brandishing fake guns and her act. And we're obviously sensitive here with, you know, shootings, the Aurora
right.
oh, that movie Madonna. Theater shooting at the Batman premiere in July. So we didn't just want to exploit that. We want to have an opinion on it. We want to be intelligent about it. And so in addition to having this sort of dream combination of built-in audience and content, you know, we want to bring a critical perspective to it and some intelligence, if possible. I mean, sometimes when you're writing about Justin Bieber throwing up on stage,
right?
You know, you really are just trying to skip, you know, sort of skip off the news. But, you know, unlike maybe TMZ or, you know, National Enquirer type approach, you know, we have some fun with it. We sort of connect it to other things. that are going on and say, you know, what does this mean? And of course, the holy grail of creating dialogue and having an intelligent comment thread under your posts, which is pretty hard to find at a lot of, you know, newspapers. And in the comment section, you sort of grit your teeth when you're reading it because mm-hmm. it devolves into, you know, political backbiting and that kind of thing. But we want to, you know, create dialogue about these things and engage our readers beyond just check out, you know,
the latest pretty, thing. Yeah.
Yeah. These pretty flashing bubbles kind of thing.
So what were people, since you mentioned Madonna, what were people saying about what she did? Were they critical? I mean, did you get a lot of back and forth about, you know, this is terrible, this is great? You know, what were people saying?
I think it was kind of a tempest in a teapot because there were a small handful of people who contacted Nine News, which is the NBC TV affiliate here in Denver, KUSA, complaining about it and saying, you know, this was insensitive and whatever. And I think if you pay, you know, $80 to $150 or more to see Madonna at a 18,000 seat arena, and you're a fan of hers, you know that she's well known for this, using swastika iconography in her act, using, you know, burning crosses, things like this.
And flashing her breast.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, I think it was a handful of people who complained, and I think because it's still very raw here, you know, gun violence,
right.
If you go back to Columbine, 13 years ago, there's a lot of sensitivity to that here. So I think it was a handful of people, but I think it would have been irresponsible of us not to acknowledge it and not
right.
to, you know, chase it and say, okay, what's the real issue here? Is it this tiny amount of people? And what we found, my editor, my arts and entertainment and features editor at the Denver Post, Tucker Shaw, was actually the guy who wrote the sort of reaction piece about it for us yesterday. What he found is that, you know, most people weren't that offended by it, and most mm-hmm. people weren't that surprised by it. And, you know, we're like, it sort of, you know, goes back to that censorship versus free speech argument of, you know, this is an artist trying to portray something, and these are metaphors. And in fact, she released a statement to Billboard a couple weeks ago, you know, already, that said, guns are metaphors, and this is my artistic license as a, you know, a pop star. I can sort of say these things, and for people to get offended is their right, of course. You know, I certainly don't mean this in any sort of advocating violence way.
Can you kind of give us an overview of the Denver Post Arts and Entertainment online section?
I'm a print reporter as well. I mean, that's what I was hired on to do, you know, 7 or so years ago in that section. And at the time, I was the only GA reporter. Everybody was a critic. And that's a pretty cheap joke I used to make around the office. I'm like, everyone's a critic. And in fact, everyone was. We had a fine arts critic. We had a TV critic, a film critic, you know, a pop music critic, all that stuff, a theater critic. And as it's evolved over the years, you know, we still have those roles. We still have Joanne Ostro, who used to be at the Washington Post, and she's one of the, you know, few standing full-time TV critics in the country. Lisa Kennedy, our film critic, who's now also our theater critic. You know, she used to be at Us Magazine and The Village Voice. She's, you know, in Entertainment Weekly every week and on NPR frequently. And I mean, she's one of the last standing, you know, film critics. It's not quite as modular as it was. We've all become a little more magnanimous in our view of what we cover and what we do. So everything goes online first. If we can break news on our blogs, we do. We're all very engaged, you know, in social media and Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest. And we write about other things. You know, I'm still ostensibly a GA reporter, but I'm also the features and entertainment blogs editor. I do, you know, our travel and entertainment newsletters that go out weekly. You know, I contribute to Reverb. Some of us freelance here and there when it obviously doesn't conflict with our post duties. So, you know, I mean, not to parrot a corporate, you know, sort of talking memo or whatever, but I mean, we really are, you know, digital first before we were calling it that. That's kind of our mission is we get something that immediately goes online. We try to connect it to past coverage we've done, whether, you know, physically or sort of intellectually. And we just try to show context in that way. And, you know, those things feed each other. I mean, we put our online content out there first. And then the sort of goal is to cull the best of that and edit it down and give it a little bit more thought, and that's what goes in print.
Why go digital first? Why not, you know, if you still got a print element, you know, don't you want to hold something back to to keep that special?
Well, I think because it's just the reality. I mean, it's an economic necessity. It makes sense with the state of the industry. It's just what we have to do. That's where most of our readers are these days. I mean, we still have, you know, a pretty good circulation. I think we're still a top 12 circulation paper. 300,000 or 400,000 on Sundays and a couple 300,000 on the weekdays. And we're still a daily. We still print every single day, unlike, you know, some papers and I think Detroit and, you know, elsewhere. But, I mean, that's just where the readers are. And that's, you know, you can't break news in print these days. You got to break it online, and then you got to give commentary and context and sort of add some richness and depth in print. And, you know, there's just a lot more multimedia possibilities online. There's video, there's audio, there's photo slideshows, there's, you know, linking to other things you've done. So, I mean, that's really the impetus to do that is it's just the way of the world. It's just the way things are, and we'd be, you know, fools not to do that. And for a long time, you know, as you probably well know, the newspaper industry was foolish not to do that. It was very behind the times in taking advantage of the multimedia possibilities of the digital world. And, you know, we look at our print sections. I mean, the two sections I write for the most are our Friday entertainment section and our Sunday arts and culture section. And we look at those almost like weekly magazines to an extent. I mean, they're not as content rich as, you know, an alternative Newsweekly that literally only comes out once a week in print and is, you know, however many pages. But, you know, we look at those with sort of, here's the wrap up, here's the best stuff coming, here's the best stuff that just happened, here's some interviews, here's some, you know, advance notice of some things, here's some context, like I said. So it just has a different name now. We've been doing that for a while, and, you know, now that we're under the
auspices,
or whatever, of digital first media, that's just kind of the talking point that we use, but that's just what we've been doing for a few years.
You know, as you sort of alluded to, a lot of, you know, large newspapers were foolish. They, you know, we'll do digital content, but we're always going to make money off of our print, even though the figures showed that they were losing money in print. And what we've seen over the last, you know, 5 years or so is this shift to, you know, digital first, you know, having that content up front. And then, so then the role, you know, Denver Post is, you know, it's a large paper that's still printing daily is says something, maybe about what you guys are doing. So where do you guys fit in the arts and entertainment scene in Colorado?
Well, I think that we have, you know, some authority, as an old, you know, 100-plus-year-old print product, the sort of paper of record, but in a multimedia way. I mean, we're the largest media outlet if you sort of add up all the, you know, the reach we have, and as our ad people like to say, you know, I mean, in like a 1,000-mile radius, you know, we're the flagship media news group paper. We're, I think, the largest of all the, you know, digital first, Journal Register, all that outlets, and our reach, if you add up print and online and our sponsorships and advertising and yada yada, you know, we have that sort of authority and reach that a lot of outlets here don't have. And the dearly departed Rocky Mountain News, which was even older than the Post, and, you know, our main competition for the majority of the Denver Post lifespan, which went out of business a few years. You know, we were a two newspaper town here for a long time, one of the last, you know, mid-sized mm-hmm. markets like that. You know, I think they had the same role and that same sort of authority and paper of record. And, you know, we fought tooth and nail with them, and it was good. It made us better, and we really miss them. I had a lot of friends there. And so, you know, now that we're sort of the last daily newspaper standing, there's, you know, of course, other strong media here. There's, you know, TV, there's Westward, which is the Village Voice paper here, the alternative news weekly. And in fact, Voice Media is now based solely in Denver. They bought out the New York Village Voice and some of the New Times papers around the country, and they're based here in Denver now. And, you know, TV stations and monthly magazines like 5280 Magazine, which does really good long form journalism. But, you know, I mean, I think we're in a unique position to, like I said, you know, sort of come off of these events very quickly online, instantly generate some commentary, have that sort of authority. All our critics are very knowledgeable, have demonstrated their the commitment to the things they cover, you know, in many ways over the years. So I think that we're unique in that we have both authority and reach, and certainly that doesn't mean that everything we do is always great or that we're always right. But I think that we've managed to hang on to our audience despite, you know, losing print subscribers, despite, you know, losing money over the years. And we're willing to experiment and try some different things, like with Reverb. We're even looking at doing that with some other features blogs, maybe our beer blog, which is called First Drafts, maybe our food blog, which is called Colorado Table, you know, adding more content to those, making them more interactive and multimedia. And I think that that's where we fit. I think that when we say things, you know, people pay attention, and not just because, you know, we're like, you know, sit up and pay attention with the Denver Post, but I think it's because we've sort of earned that over the years.
Well, and you know, that's brand, really, I guess, you know, something that not everybody who starts a blog, they, you know, they're fighting to create that brand, but you guys have that history, and that's a valuable thing for a lot of people. A lot of people associate the Denver Post with whatever the news history that they've been able to create, and that's something, you know, it's a lot of newspapers are struggling to find their place in the digital world. Many of them realize that they still have that brand, and the brand has some value and identification with their readership. And I think that's been something, you know, how to maintain that, how to maintain your news quality, you know, as your staff shrinks, you know, you're trying to reach out into a new environment like digital.
Absolutely.
Now, where does social media fit into this mix?
It's the candy that we hand out to people, you know. It's the trumpet that we use to herald or communicate, you know, some of our stories. I think we're, you know, one of the top papers in the country in terms of Twitter followers and Facebook engagement. We have a Monday feature section called Smart. Mm-hmm. The S is a dollar sign, and it's sort of a consume, you know, half business, half culture kind of consumer-friendly section. And Alana Jefferson, the editor of that, she also runs a blog called Colorado at Home, which is sort of, you know, home, garden, consumer things. I mean, she's extremely active on Pinterest and uses, you know, that gets, I mean, we get story ideas from social media. We get quotes. We track down sources with it. You know, when I was covering the first presidential debate at the University of Denver, about, I think, 3 weeks ago, maybe a little more than that here in Denver, you know, I used social media to cover the debate fest, which was the cultural fest going on around that. I tweeted pictures. So, you know, I mean, we use it in all the usual ways, and, you know, it's certainly there's just some of that very basic standard, well, we have to engage people on social media and whatever, but, I like to think we use it intelligently, too. I mean, I heard about this local bar here in Denver, Bender's Tavern, closing late yesterday before I was going to go home, and this very popular but sort of troubled jam band bar, Quixote's, taking over its space. And before I finished my interviews with the owners, before I got the full story, I broke the news on Twitter, on our Reverb Twitter. And of course, you know, wanted to scoop all the other papers in town because I know my colleagues or, you know, my competition or whatever at Last Word was trying to do it. And so I tweeted that first, and then I wrote the piece. And I said, you know, more to come, check Reverb in a few minutes. So we break news on it, and we write it, you know, every day, and just watch for things to come across TweetDeck and make sure we're not missing anything. And we have sort of a partnership with Nine News, the NBC TV affiliate here, even though we're, you know, competitive with them on some things. But, you know, sometimes they break stuff, sometimes we break stuff, sometimes we run their stories. And a lot of that is first coming across through, you know, Facebook and Twitter.
What are your hopes for online reporting and feature coverage for the next few years, for the Post and for yourself?
My hope is that we can continue to hang on to some of these traditional titles and roles as critics, because there are so few of them in the country these days. And, you know, certainly the New York Times, the LA Times, the Chicago papers, Seattle, Houston, markets like that will probably always have name critics. But that's a rarity in smaller markets. You know, you're seeing critics disappear in Detroit, Minneapolis, Phoenix, and places like that. And, you know, we lost the full-time theater critic position here in Denver, and our film critic is now our film and theater critic. And I'd like to not see any more shrinkage of that, you know, to keep a TV critic, to keep a fine arts critic, to keep a pop music critic.
Why is that important for you to have your own local critic as opposed to, you know, hey, here's the Roger Ebert column?
Because I think, you know, it allows that person to concentrate on that subject matter and show the depth of their knowledge and what they can bring to it, but also to just pay exclusive attention to that one thing. And I think that allows you to just be better, you know, on your beat as it's a traditional beat, you know, break news on it, develop sources on it, be in depth, provide context and commentary. And, you know, the only reason we're here is to serve our readers and to inform them and give them perspective on things. And when you're juggling too many things, you can't do that because you're just giving short shrift to the thing that you're most interested in or which is sort of your mission to cover. And that doesn't mean that we can't continue to evolve and do more digitally and more multimedia and more online coverage and continue to wear a lot of different hats as everybody in journalism is these days. But I would just really like to see that remain, even as, you know, economic pressures push against that and sort of erode that. And certainly, you know, sometimes the management and leadership doesn't think it makes sense to do that. But I would really like to see that in a broader sense. I think we should just continue to experiment and see what works and what doesn't. You know, the Reverb experiment has been hugely successful in growing page views and engaging a different audience that wasn't really reading the print product. And I'd like to see that with other features and entertainment blogs. And just to sort of remain, you know, cognizant of where our readers are and how we can reach them and how we can sort of best serve them.
We've been talking with John Wenzel of the Denver Post. Thanks for talking to us, John, and telling us about what's going on there.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the shifting state of the media. This episode was recorded on October 20th, 2012 in Washington, D.C. You can learn more about this interview and our podcast at itsalljournalism.com. And where can people find out more about you, John?
They can go to DenverPost.com and, you know, just search the site. I write a lot of articles every week. They can go to my Twitter account, which is John T. Wenzel, JohnTWenzel. Like I said, I break a lot of news on there, and I retweet a lot of good stuff from my colleagues. And they can go to blogs.denverpost.com, which is where all of our features and entertainment blogs are.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, thank you very much, and you have a good day.
Thanks. You too.